Before I get started, I just want to say one thing. Don't stop bringing that amazing energy to us every week. Thank you so much. I laid there, flat on my back, motionless. My ears are ringing. I opened my eyes confused. And I saw my best friend's mother looking over me. She said, "It's going to be okay, honey. It's going to be all right." I didn't know what she was talking about. But as I laid there, I heard a helicopter in the background. That's the last memory I had. Before that, I was sitting at the top of this 14-foot-tall metal slot. And the teacher blew the whistle. That meant recess was over. It's time to come in. And being the mischievous little six-year-old that I was, I thought, I'm going to wait here as long as I can so that the kids behind me get in trouble when I slide down, get in line, and act like the golden child. And just as I had that thought, I felt a shove in my back. And I didn't go down the slide. I went head first off the side of that 14-foot tall slide onto the hard ground below. In the helicopter that took me to the hospital from the schoolyard, the nurse said to me, "You know, if you ever want to come back, just let us know. We'll give you a ride." I don't know if you've ever been in a helicopter, in a stretcher in a helicopter, but when that thing is going up and down, I said, "I think I'm good." By the time I got to the hospital, my mom was there. She towed a couple of my brothers behind. And I remember seeing her and thinking, I should feel okay. But I didn't. All I felt was fear. I felt alone. I was the only one laying in that stretcher. On the other side of town, my father got a call on one of those old cell phones. He had heard what had happened, so he hopped in his truck, and he absolutely floored it across town. He got to this light at the high school, and it was backed up, so he hopped the curb, drove his truck across to the high school soccer field, made his way to the hospital. By the time my dad got there, they were going to be transporting me to another hospital. I was going to have to go by myself. As a six-year-old boy, I was absolutely terrified. My father came up to me as I laid in that stretcher, and he grabbed my hand. And he prayed with me. And I don't remember what he said. It was simple. But I remember that all that fear, all that terrifying notion that I was alone, it washed away instantly. I was at peace. Talk about the peace that surpasses understanding. I was feeling that in that moment. Turns out, you know, I went to the other hospital, spent about a month in a hospital, had a fractured skull, blood clot in my brain. And the doctors were worried that they're going to have to operate. But things cleared up. And I only got a little bit of issues now. I'm good. I'm healthy. But you know, I want to talk about this notion of the divine conspiracy. That all that is within, and all that is within, and all that is beyond, and all that is beyond, is actively conspiring for your good and the good of all that is. That all that is within and all that is without, beyond is actively conspiring for your good and the good of all that is. Today I want to talk about how that divine conspiracy, how it empowers us that when we trust that divine conspiracy, when we become, I'm sorry, I got to do it, when we become divine conspiracy theorists, it allows us, it frees us to surrender egoic attachments, to receive union with Christ consciousness, and embrace selfless action. So that's what I want to talk about today. Trust, surrender, receive, act. And before I go into each one of those things, I want to invite you today, think about your own experience. Think about those moments, those subtle moments of connection to the divine. You might be thinking, was it even real? Did that really even happen? It was so long ago that even if it did happen, I haven't felt it lately. The truth is that the divine activity, past, present, future, visible and invisible, is acting right now in your lives. And all we need to do is remember. Surrender. I'll tell you what, surrendering egoic attachments. I don't know about you, but for me, I don't surrender easily. About 8 years ago, I had my first introduction to New Thought. I didn't know what was New Thought at the time, but I'd read the book Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. And in the book, the central premise is what you envision in detail with emotion on a daily basis is what shows up in your life. Now, by that time in my life, I'd forgotten what it meant to experience divine union. So I read that book and I thought, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to go get money, you know, all these different things. Because I didn't realize that the things that my ego was driving towards, without a North Star, without the divine guiding light, without my awareness of that, would ultimately lead to pain and suffering in my life and in the lives of those around me. You know, I've come to realize now that my egoic attachments are all rooted in insecurity and fear. Growing up, we didn't really have much money. And I say that lightly. You know, we ate spaghetti and sauce because we have five boys in my family, probably like 5 or 6 days a week. The cheapest thing you could possibly eat. My mom died when I was 10 as a result of her addictions. And from that moment forward, things just got progressively kind of decayed. My father tore apart the house in an attempt to rebuild it, but never got around to rebuilding it. So we lived in a house with subfloor. It's like plywood floor. And instead of doors, we had plastic, construction plastic hanging over the doors. So I thought, if I could just get enough money, if I could just get enough love, I could fill all these things in my life that I just spent so much time experiencing the pain of. You know, Alan Watts, in a video that I've watched no less than like 50 times, he's talking about Carl Jung and Carl Jung's perception of the ego, of the will. And Carl Jung talks about the ego as the true will of God. Confusing, huh? Right? But what he says is that at the height of a person's ego, when they have exhausted everything they have in them to try to do it by themselves, on their own, that at that point, they realize that they are isolated and alone. And that in so doing, they realize their need for love of their fellow humans and for God. You know, I had to experience that in my life. I'm not going to go into it too much today, but I had to go to some low places. I had to create a lot of pain and destruction in my life before I was actually able to realize that that thing I had forgotten about could once again become the thing that I focus my mind on. You know, as we look at these powers on the walls around us, there's one that the ego is naturally repelled by. It's not strength. It's not power. It's not will. Renunciation. And it's one that I, a lot of times, like, I'm like, okay, don't look at that one. Don't look at that one. See, ego blinds us to that which is good on the other side of the things that we let go of. Ego isn't an enemy. It's not some bad thing that we need to rid ourselves of in our lives. But we need to understand what it does. The ego serves to protect. All that pain that I'm talking about, all those things that I've experienced, all those things we've experienced, those things that are painful, suffering, the ego serves to protect that. And when we can understand that, we could do some, I do jujitsu, we could do some jujitsu with it. But still, renunciation? Really? Doesn't renunciation entail weakness? Doesn't entail defeat? You know, the Buddhists talk about all of life is suffering. And that all of our suffering has its root in the things that we attach to. These are spiritual powers. They're not just things. Renunciation is a power. You know, we sing this a lot, right? When we let go of the things we attach to, we experience God. I release, I let go, I let the Spirit run my life, and my heart is open wide. I'm only here for God. So when we trust that divine conspiracy, that golden thread that runs through all of our lives, whether aware of it or not, we can let go of those attachments. So how do you know? How do you know if something I'm attaching to or holding on to is good? I'm not going to call it bad. Or is it serving me or is it not serving me? Is it fostering goodness and truth and virtue in my life? Or is it bringing me down a path I don't want to go down? First off, I'd say truly, you just know. At the core of our beings, when we're doing something that is not in alignment, we know. We can convince ourselves like, you know what, this is actually good for me, this is good for me. But we know. And then second, you can ask yourself a question. Is this thing that I'm holding on to, is this thing that I'm attaching to, what is it creating? Is it creating paranoia, detachment, fear, suffering? Or is it blossoming with the fruits of the Spirit? Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, self-control, unity. When we let go of our egoic attachments, we receive unity with Christ consciousness. I've spent months, years, truly decades, holding on to things that to experience that at the exact moment that I have let go of them to experience transformation in my life. But I convinced myself that whole time, I got to hold on to this. This thing is what's keeping me safe. When you're holding on to something so tightly, you can't receive anything. Even if somebody's trying to give it to you, your hands are not open. But when you let go, Your hands are open in a posture to receive the good which is coming to you, the good that is always there if we were to just let go. Wonder. Oh, don't want to trip there. Whenever I let go, and dare I say, whenever we let go, we are met at the exact moment with the wonder, because when we let go, we are blessed with things that are beyond our imagination. We can conceive something in our mind that is good, but when we let go, we receive something that is better. Romans 12:2 says, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds. Now, Abby and I, we grew up in really conservative Christianity. So we memorized a lot of Bible verses. And Abby was telling me this story the other day. I never heard this one. It was like ridiculous. So she goes, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds. And she did that whole thing. You should ask her to do it afterwards. You know, for like Transformers or something. You know, but what they taught us growing up, like in that really restrictive, conservative version of Christianity, was that meant like, don't watch bad movies, don't spend time with people who are doing bad things, blah, blah, blah. What I take that to mean is that as we let go of our attachments, we experience this transformation of mind. You know, Unity's second principle says that we are co-creators with God. And if we look at this thing as a dichotomy, of conformed by the things of this world, transformed by the renewing of your minds, right? Like, I love that kid. We are either co-creating fear, paranoia, separation, or we are co-creating love, joy, peace, goodness. You know, oak tree is a beautiful thing, an old oak. But if that oak tree were to never drop that acorn, there would cease to be a new oak. If you look at the example of Jesus, like regardless of how you interpret the story of Jesus, regardless of what your perspective is on it, this is somebody who surrendered themselves to the thing that we are most naturally going to hold on to as best as we can, to life itself. And that in surrendering to that, experienced a resurrection, transcendence, a renewed mind, on a cosmic level, Christ consciousness. Look, I'll be honest. This concept of like Christ consciousness, I love it. But it's something I don't experience all that much. I know it's there, but if I'm really being honest, like, it happens, like, let's say I pray 5 times, meditate a couple hours, something like that. There's, like, glimpses, tiny glimpses of those moments. But that's okay. Because this is a spiritual practice. And practice entails, you know what? You're going to mess up. You're not going to do things exactly as they're supposed to be done. Me and Abby, I'm horrible at basketball, but we go over to Blue Hole now because I bought this little $5 basketball, and we're like shooting all the time. We miss every shot. Abby like did, she drained one and was like, gooseneck. I'm like, what? But it was this concept of one day at a time. And the concept is basically like release yourself of the judgment for the day before so that you can live here in the present. What if we take that step farther to one moment at a time? One breath at a time. Because when we release our judgments to the thing that we did 5 minutes ago, to the thing we did with our very previous breath, we free ourselves to act the way that we need to act in this moment. You know, Ram Dass is a spiritual teacher I love. And he says, if you think that you've experienced enlightenment, go spend the weekend with your family. And it's so true, right? Like, because we spend time thinking, okay, we have experienced this transformation. Things are going to be different. You know, walk into a room full of five brothers and they just start going at you. And after that, it's distant memory. There's many paths that make the experience of God, there's many paths to describe making the experience of God a more present reality. And I love all these different paths. I really do. In the yoga path, they talk about samadhi. The Buddhists talk about enlightenment. Christians, you know, we could talk about it in a couple different ways. You may say salvation is similar. You may say that the concept of sanctification or deification is similar. But they're all describing this attempt to make this experience of God more persistent. A renewal of mind must be met with an outward action. And it allows us to embrace selfless action. As we trust, surrender, receive, we can now act. You know, every action has an equal and opposite reaction. When we receive, we give. When we are served, we serve. When we are loved, we love. I love like what's said when we do this, the passing of the plate, and it says, we complete the sacred circle of giving and receiving. Because when there's a true renewal of consciousness, the action comes with it as well. Unity's fifth principle. Through thoughts, words, and actions, we live the truth we know. We live the truth we know. You know, I'll be honest. A lot of times, like, I'll experience this, what I think is a transformation of my mind. And then I struggle to actually enact it. Maybe you want to call it manifest it. To be the way that I know that I need to be. James 2:26 says, faith without works is dead. You know, we're not monks. There may be some of us that may have that on our path in the future. But our experience of God is not one that we stay in a cell, experience God and give that back, to give that energy back. We live, breathe, have our essence in community. We're sitting shoulder to shoulder with different people. Our experience of God must be one that also embraces in love the people around us. I mentioned that I'm really into yoga. I actually did a little bit of yoga before coming here, but I'm like not that good really. I can't even like touch my toes. But the concept of yoga is union. And it's bringing one's insides into congruity with the divine outside. The Hindus say Atman is Brahman. When we are at that peak experience, when we are experiencing that union, there's no division. And there's four paths. So, you know, when we talk about like the yoga asanas, the poses, that's hatha yoga. In Hinduism, there's four paths of yoga, which is also like the spiritual practice of yoga. There's raja yoga, bhakti yoga, jnana yoga, and karma yoga. Bhakti yoga is this path of love and devotion. Jnana yoga is the path of intellect. Raja yoga is the path of meditation. Karma yoga is the path of action. And in that, they say, one does not become a karma yogi, person who practices this, without first giving up the selfishness behind an action. In the book of Matthew, Jesus says, seek ye first the kingdom of God and God's righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. when we let go of our attachment to the need for an outcome. We release so that we can take the steps forward that we need to take here and now, knowing that all that is good will come to us, that the divine conspiracy is not a conspiracy. The outcome may be different, or it might be the same. But our attachment to the outcome is very different. And it makes the path beautiful and different. There's this prayer by St. Teresa of Avila. I want you to think about this in the context of this concept of Christ consciousness. As we experience this renewal of mind, renewal of heart. It says, Christ has no body now but yours. No hands, no feet on earth but yours. Yours are the eyes with which he looks. Compassion on this world. Yours are the feet with which he walks to do good. Yours are the hands, you are his eyes, you are the body. Christ has no body now but yours. I want to leave you with one final thought. There's a quote. I'm going to take this divine conspiracy to a whole new level, so you ready? Says, you should think about the world as being controlled by a small minority of very powerful people. And that group of people is you and your friends. As we go into meditation, I invite you to close your eyes. To uncross your arms and your legs. To open your hands. You may set them on your lap, open. And I invite you in this moment to breathe in your experience of the divine. That thing which may seem like a distant memory. The thing you question. To breathe life into it, knowing that it is true. And that it is good. We take two deep breaths. And as we remember, we find a new trust, a new hope. We open our hands in practice of letting go. And we go deeper into our heart center to find that which we are still holding on to for some reason. And in this moment, we surrender. We let go. Knowing that a greater path lies ahead. And at the moment that we open our hands, that our heart is open, we breathe in the life of God. And and with this renewal, with this energy, with this rising consciousness. We are empowered, strengthened, emblazoned to act with service and love. And so it is.